Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Bunker Show, coming to you live and direct from our bunker hidden in the sewers, deep, deep, deep below Westminster. And joining us today, a ray of sunshine, here's Helen.
Hi, everyone. I still don't have a voice, so this will be all you hear from me, I should think. But I'm in the chat room, and I would really like to talk to you, so come in there and join me.
So if you've got any questions, just click on the chat room box and join us in there. And we're always interested in your opinion. As always, riding shotgun, here's Jimmy.
And as always, so lovely to be here. And, yeah, really looking forward to getting back into it with our return guest, Andrew.
Yeah, it's always interesting to talk to Andrew. It's always great to catch the evidence, the facts that back up his investigations, which is his website, checktheevidence.com. And Andrew, thank you for joining us. And sorry, it's a bit of a belated start to the Bunker Show.
Oh, it's nice to be back. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you as always. What have you been up to since we last saw you a few months ago?
Well, you know, bits and pieces, doing some, you know, work to earn a bit of money just for everyday things, you know, domestic chores, family things, and I've also done, you know, a bit of research as well, got some articles related to expanding Earth. Somebody sent me some stuff about fluoride in water. They were trying to get that, stop that from being put in water in Yorkshire, and they sent me this 200-page report they'd written, put that on the website. And we've had a new 9/11 film was released just before Christmas. Somebody got me into Agenda 21 stuff, so I put together a three-hour presentation which relates to that and why that's another scam that we're being subjected to. So yeah, been fairly busy overall.
Oh, it's really interesting you bring up the Agenda 21 stuff. You know, like, did you happen to catch any of the Oscars this week?
No, I don't. I generally, you know, completely unplugged from the mainstream. So, you know,
I don't blame you there. And you know, normally I wouldn't indulge myself in such, you know, like corporate shenanigans. But it was really interesting because Leonardo DiCaprio won Best Actor, and he's been touted for one for years, and he's got a very strong environmental stance. You know, he's quite the activist, and you should just out of interest, YouTube his acceptance speech. Mm-hmm. He really hammers a very Agenda 21 friendly speech there. You know, mm-hmm. He's got a bit of a line going. Could you just let our listeners know a little bit about Agenda 21?
Yeah, certainly Agenda 21. I mean, I've been aware of this for a few years, but I had a friend, Mena, who got me sort of kind of more interested in it and suggested that I put something together, because the point about Agenda 21 when people discuss it, and one of the main people that discusses it is Rosa Core, who lives in California, and she describes Agenda 21 as an inventory and control plan to control all land use, all construction, all use of farming, and basically all people in the world. This was laid out in this document, which was released in 1992 at the UN summit, and it was called Agenda 21, as in 21 being the 21st century. And they put together this framework, which has then sort of rippled down to the local councils throughout the world. And, you know, if anyone wants to go and look at their own local council's plans for what we call sustainable communities, that's the key phrase, really, is sustainable communities and sustainability. And it all sounds very benign and very sort of, you know, all environmentally friendly and all of this, that and the rest of it. But really, it's a kind of back door for getting people used to having their ways of living curtailed, controlled, shaped, shifted by legislation and guidelines which are made by people who are not elected. So, you know, if somebody wants to build a block of flats or something, that has to be done to these certain planning guidelines and so forth. And I, you know, I looked on my local council documents, and that, yeah, sure enough, there was the reference to the UN summit 1992. They didn't call it Agenda 21. I don't think they you know, put something to do with sustainability. But of course, all this is a scam, because I know that free energy, for example, is one of the things that's not talked about very much. Once we have the free energy in general usage, then we can completely transform the environment and the way in which we can do things in the environment and what environmental damage is caused. When we have free energy in general usage, then that whole equation completely changes. And unfortunately, all of the people that are talking about Agenda 21 don't connect it with the scam of, you know, of the cover-up of free energy. So all these are arguments that are based on, you know, careful use of fuels, careful, you know, control of carbon dioxide. This is just a total scam. In carbon dioxide itself has nothing to do with climate change.
So, I mean, in terms of it coming through non-governmental channels, that's also the European Union is, yes. Is that a tool for it? Because it seems right. like what you're talking about in a lot of ways, and what it appears when you look into some of these, is a bit like a 21st century version of the Enclosure Act, where people enclosed off land and laid claim to it. And effectively, people were pushed off certain lands. So it seems like it's almost doing that. It's to, you know, do you feel it is a way of cataloguing and controlling resources through using?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you'll see if you look at what's happened, particularly if you look at, say, Rosa Corey's work. And you just put Rosa Corey, that's spelt K-O-I-R-E, and Agenda 21 into your favourite search engine, and you know, you will get the YouTube videos and so forth where she goes through some of the experience that she's had. And she was involved in, you know, in land management assessments for some department of the US government or local council body, the equivalent over there. Or the states, you know, the state governing body, I forget which. And she discovered all of this legislation which hadn't really been, you know, seemingly had come in through the back door. And yes, it is to control land usage and to only, you know, permit certain types of development and so forth.
Well, are you familiar with the Codex Alimentarius program?
A little bit, yes.
It seemed like there was a body of legislation which, amongst many things, curtailed the use of herbal remedies.
Right.
It also controlled and put restrictions on the way food was processed and what was allowed to be processed with it. And it's quite an interesting element to look into, and it seems that you know, I was going to ask if you think that's interlinked with Agenda 21.
It is, and I think it's, you know, what I put in this presentation towards the end was I put up what I call a picture of the control grid. You know, it's not, obviously other people have called it that, and it's not, I'm not trying to say I invented the name control grid or anything like that. But I basically put four pieces in that, and that, you know, it's an incomplete number of pieces. And I put health, energy, and things like terrorism and climate change. They're all part of this control grid. And of course, the banking and monetary system is as well. So yes, very, very definitely, control of you know, the health system, as in things like you know, what drugs are given to us and what drugs are not given to us, and you know, banned and so forth. And also, as you say, the control of supplements And, you know, banning the usage or having people have to get licenses to sell these substances which have been in use for thousands of years, you know, it's just absolutely horrendous. And I remember, you know, I'd got subscribed to one of these health supplement websites I got some cat's claw and devil's claw, which is meant to be good for chronic fatigue. I think I got these for somebody else. And then I got an email from them, you know, a few months later saying, oh, you know, you better get your these stocks of this, and this supplement because we're not going to be able to sell them after this date. And I'm thinking, crikey, you know, this is terrible that these natural substances are now being banned from sale.
Yeah, and it seems that there's a part of that that's also happening in the food processing chain as well.
Yes.
That do seem to make it harder for people to have the range of choice that ideally that they would like, or that they you know, have previously had the option to have.
Right. You know, I mean, basically, if you have anything which is either free or very cheap, has no toxic side effects, and is effective and is known to be effective, you better watch out because that's going to get banned, you know, or covered up.
You see what's going on with local councils around the country where they're actually banning foraging.
Yeah, I'd heard of that recently, and that's, you know, it's horrendous that they should try and ban that. I mean, that's a basic sort of human right that's existed, and I think it was at least partly protected by law, wasn't it, until, you know, they're trying to introduce this silly nonsense about foraging, you know, and horrendous.
It does seem that there's a program to erode our liberties on quite a number of fronts.
Right. And I read of this community that have live on Dartmoor. I forget the name of the community. Stewards. I just clicked on it yesterday and I've forgotten the name. But there's a community on Dartmoor, and they have an area of land which they manage. And they live off, I think there's about 15 people or something, like something around that sort of number. And they've lived there for 15 years. And now I think it's the national parks, you know, of Dartmoor. They want to evict these people, you know. Yet they've, you know, they serve the community. They've been of service to the community. They're managing the land well. They've been there for 15 years, for heaven's sake. You know, they've built a house out of recycled materials. And they actually talk the Agenda 21 language, you know, sustainability and renewable energy and this sort of thing, you know, and yet they're trying to evict these people, and they've had to mount this legal defence, which they're trying to raise some money for, because they, you know, they don't have, they're basically totally unplugged from the grid, you know, so this is what they don't want. They don't want that. They don't want people to be completely free of all the trappings of the grid, you know, and being snared in the grid.
Yeah, and that makes it very, you know, very difficult for people to, like I say, you know, get the options and the choices, and so they have to actually shout about what it is that they're doing, because often the narrative is defined by, you know, the media or the vested interests. And I was going to say we're going to look into a little bit of about false flags.
Mm.
I've got a clip which gives us a brief history of false flags.
Yes.
From James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and the clip you're going to you've asked to play is related to 9/11.
Right.
Which
yes.
is, you know, really probably the daddy of all false flags. But anyway, here's a brief history of false flags. Thank you, Dark City.
In naval warfare, a false flag refers to an attack where a vessel flies a flag other than their true battle flag before engaging their enemy.
Do you want to listen to it?
Yes, please.
Okay. Your microphones will be live.
Tactic, to deceive a government's own population into believing that an enemy nation has attacked them. In the 1780s, Swedish King Gustav III was looking for a way to unite an increasingly divided nation and raise his own falling political fortunes. deciding that a war with Russia would be a sufficient distraction, but lacking the political authority to send the nation to war unilaterally. He arranged for the head tailor of the Swedish Opera House to sew some Russian military uniforms. Swedish troops were then dressed in the uniforms and sent to attack Sweden's own Finnish border post along the Russian border. The citizens in Stockholm, believing it to be a genuine Russian attack, were suitably outraged, and the Swedish-Russian War of 1788 to 1790 began. In 1931, Japan was looking for a pretext to invade Manchuria. On September 18th of that year, a lieutenant in the Imperial Japanese Army detonated a small amount of TNT along a Japanese-owned railway in the Manchurian city of Mukden. The act was blamed on Chinese dissidents and used to justify the occupation of Manchuria just 6 months later. When the deception was later exposed, Japan was diplomatically shunned and forced to withdraw from the League of Nations. In 1939, Heinrich Himmler masterminded a plan to convince the public that Germany was the victim of Polish aggression in order to justify the invasion of Poland. It culminated in an attack on Sender Gliwice, a German radio station near the Polish border, by Polish prisoners who were dressed up in Polish military uniforms, shot dead, and left at the station. The Germans then broadcast an anti-German message in Polish from the station, pretended that it had come from a Polish military unit that had attacked Sender Gliwice, and presented the dead bodies as evidence of the attack. Hitler invaded Poland immediately thereafter, starting World War II. In 1954, the Israelis hired a number of Egyptian Jews to plant bombs in American and British cinemas, libraries, and other civilian targets, to be blamed on the Muslim Brotherhood or other malcontents. The plan, known as the Levant Affair, was part of an effort to convince the British to retain their military presence in the occupied Suez Canal zone. Several bombings took place, but the British were ultimately forced out after Nasser nationalized the canal in 1956. In 1962, the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff authored a document called Operation Northwoods, calling for the U.S. government to stage a series of fake attacks, including the shooting down of military or civilian U.S. aircraft, the destruction of a U.S. ship, sniper attacks in Washington, and other atrocities, to blame on the Cubans as an excuse for launching an invasion. President Kennedy refused to sign off on the plan, and was killed in Dallas the next year. In August 1964, the USS Maddox, a U.S. destroyer on patrol in the Gulf of Tonkin, believed it had come under attack from North Vietnamese Navy torpedo boats, engaging in invasive action and returning fire. The incident led to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, authorizing President Johnson to begin open warfare in Vietnam. It was later admitted that no attack had occurred, and in 2005 it was revealed that the NSA had manipulated their information to make it look like an attack had taken place. In June 1967, the Israelis attacked the USS Liberty, a U.S. Navy technical research ship, off the coast of Egypt. The ship was strafed repeatedly for hours in an apparent attempt to blame the attack on Egypt and draw the Americans into the Six-Day War, but amazingly the crew managed to keep it afloat. In 2007, newly released NSA intercepts confirmed that the Israelis knew they were attacking an American ship, not an Egyptian ship as their cover story had maintained. In the fall of 1999, a wave of bloody apartment bombings swept through Russian cities, killing 293 people and causing widespread panic. Although blamed on the Chechen terrorists that the Russians were fighting in the Second Chechen War, FSB agents were caught planting the exact same type of bombs as in the other blasts later that month. The government claimed the bomb was part of a security exercise, and Vladimir Putin came to power as the next Russian president on the back of the terror wave later that year. In 2001, attacks in New York and Washington were blamed on Al-Qaeda as a pretext for invading Afghanistan. In the months leading up to the event, American negotiators had warned Afghanistan's Taliban that they were interested in securing right-of-way for proposed pipeline projects, and the U.S. would achieve this with either a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. The Bush administration's first major national security directive, a full-scale battle plan for the invasion of Afghanistan, including command and control, air and ground forces, and logistics, was drafted and sitting on the president's desk to be signed off on September 4, 2001, 7 days before the 9/11 attacks. The invasion proceeded as planned in October. These are but a few of the hundreds of such incidents that have been staged over the centuries to blame political enemies for attacks that they did not commit. The tactic remains in common use today, and will continue to be employed as long as populations still blindly believe whatever their governments tell them about the origins of spectacular terror incidents.
And read for yourselves the verdict reached by our intelligence community about the chemical weapons attack the Assad regime inflicted on the opposition and on opposition-controlled or contested neighborhoods in the Damascus suburbs on the early morning of August 21st.
For more news and information, please follow the RSS feeds at CorbettReport.com, subscribe to this YouTube channel, or follow us on Twitter at Corbett Report.
And thank you, James Corbett, for that brief history of false flags. And it's quite interesting to see that for over 200 years that concept has been used, and that sometimes it isn't till many, many years later that the official paperwork comes out to show that actually people were often losing their lives to sell an operation to the general public. Andrew, what did you make of the piece just before John Kerry spoke about 9/11 and the war plans for Afghanistan?
Well, I mean, I think some of that is fairly well documented, that, you know, there were certain things in place before 9/11. I myself haven't sort of studied that a lot, but, you know, I've heard the stories of troops being on the Afghanistan border on the 10th of September and this sort of thing, you know, and then on the American side, FEMA personnel were already in New York on the 10th of September, apparently, you know, and they'd got stuff stored in a warehouse or something for an exercise, I think. So, and also, you know, going back further than I think that example did, or clip rather, you know, we've had the stories of Spartacus in Roman times, you know, and he was armed secretly by Caesar so that he could, you know, commit atrocities against the Romans more effectively, and therefore they could build up, you know, the army.
And I guess it's, you know, James gave a number of examples there. There's also, I guess, the sinking of the Maine for the Spanish-American Civil War, which was before the 1900s. And I guess privateers in the Caribbean and the East Indies and the West Indies and Africa, 400 plus years ago. So it's a tactic which has been used quite a number of times over many years in history.
Sure. But I think, you know, when we said you're going to play this clip before we started tonight, it reminded me that James Corbett, you know, he's done things like that, the clips like that, he's done several of them. Another one that he's done is called 9/11, A Conspiracy Theory, which, you know, goes through some of the sort of circumstantial evidence about the, Osama bin Laden and so forth, and how ridiculous that whole story is. And I went to a 9/11 event, you know, that was I was asked to speak at 2 or 3 years ago now, and they played that James Corbett clip as the introduction. But unfortunately, they didn't realise that James Corbett actually is not interested in the truth of 9/11. Now, that's a shocking thing for me to state, isn't it? But I've got a clip here which I'm going to play. Just about 30 seconds, and I'll explain why he's not interested in the truth of 9/11 after I play this clip. So shall I go ahead and play this now? It's only about a minute long.
Please do, Andrew.
Okay, I'll just get this going. So just give me a second. There might be a few clicks and things, but hopefully this will go through okay.
Let's move on to an email from Anthony, who writes, I have yet to hear you comment on the split in the 9/11 research movement between the ideas of Dr. Judy Wood and her energy weapon theory and Professor Stephen Jones, who backs the thermite theory. Do you lend any support to Dr. Wood's ideas or research? Right, very good question, Anthony, and I'm sure it's one that many people out there have, so let me be as clear as I can. I do not support mini nukes, I do not support TV fakery, I do not support no planes, I do not support Vic Sims, and I do not support mystery magical energy beams from outer space. And I don't know how much more clear I can get on that, and that's not to say, please don't take that as me saying that I 100% unequivocally believe that the thermite story is the correct story. In fact, I have my reservations about that as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting clip from James. Was that where you finished it, Andrew?
Yeah, that was. It goes on a little bit after that, but basically he talks about magical mystery space beams. So this is a bit of a disappointment for somebody like James Corbett when he does all this research. And for example, James Corbett has never contacted me to verify any of the contents of my book 9/11 Finding the Truth. Where I sort of explain where this space beams idea came from. It actually came from Stephen E. Jones. He was one of the first people to actually use that phrase. But unfortunately, James Corbett has not chosen to investigate this. And therefore, James Corbett himself has become part of the 9/11 cover-up, like so many other researchers who will not talk about the evidence of what destroyed the World Trade Center. And it's absolutely fundamental to understanding what happened on 9/11. You know, if you need to understand what happened to the World Trade Center. Without that understanding, everything else, you're basically operating on low voltage. You know, you're not
giving yourself part of the information. And I mean, I think it's important that, you know, researchers like James who do some fantastic work and research, and it's worth considering, you know, each and every case, each and every proposition on its own merits. As regards the World Trade Center, I saw a Richard D. Hall program called Irrefutable.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the new film. That film was actually made by Adam Dwyer. And he was based in Australia. He's originally was in Canada when he started doing this. And that film that you refer to, Irrefutable, I've been giving away free copies of that on DVD to anybody who wants one. It's all available online. It's about 50 minutes long. And Adam had planned to make about 10 or 15 episodes of this Irrefutable series. He's currently made about 6, I think it is. So he's got about just over a third of the way through. And if anybody wants a copy of this on DVD, just click on my website and write to me. Click on the contact button and I can send them a DVD.
It's a really powerful piece in terms of, we use our senses, we are aware of, you know, how the physical world is made up. And, it makes very clear some of the very, very basic questions that were overlooked when it comes to looking at the World Trade Center. Simply because, actually, where is the World Trade Center?
Yes, where did it go? And, you're exactly right. Not only was it overlooked by the mainstream, you know, and so forth, it's been overlooked by James Corbett. You know, this is the real, really depressing thing for somebody like me, where you break out of the mainstream and you look to people in the alternative knowledge community, and you find that they're doing exactly the same sort of job as the mainstream is, you know.
It's interesting. Problem. Yeah, it's interesting because when you look back with a number of other false flags that have taken place over the years, it's been very interesting to see how that false accusation business deceptive information can be used to, you know, essentially keep people distracted away from, you know, the actual facts of
absolutely
what's happened.
And I think, you know, kind of tying together this Agenda 21 thing and the 9/11 research, which was really one of the objectives in putting that presentation I put together, that was one of the objectives, to link the two together, because obviously everyone knows 9/11 for the fear card, and it's talked about politically, And I'll say at this point, for example, somebody else who talks in similar sort of way about 9/11 to James Corbett is Ken O'Keefe. And Ken O'Keefe also, he will not discuss the destruction of the World Trade Center. And I've, you know, I actually met with Ken O'Keefe in 2013 and spent quite a bit of time explaining to him, you know, part of what I've explained here tonight, in that what happened on 9/11 involved energy, and the type of energy that it involved, for example, is related to things that happened during what's called cold fusion. You know, this, in other words, this has a history. It's known about. And Ken O'Keefe, when I explained to him, he seemed to get it. But then later on, about 18 months later, after I'd had some correspondence with him, he has this other guy on his TV program called Chris Berlin. And what does Chris Berlin talk about? He talks about thermite. And he describes Dr. Judy Woods as a disinformation agent, or agent, but, you know, and this is really terrible, because again,
well, it is interesting to see that actually what needs to happen is it needs to have a discussion about the merits and, you know, the physicality of what actually occurred. And, you know, when that conversation is closed down, that's when, you know, it becomes difficult to essentially get to the truth, because
when you
see irrefutable, and, you know, the volume of the World Trade Center is not lying on the ground where it should be. There's a number of things that are very, very clear from just looking and using your own eyes to see that actually that, you know, there are issues with that. So,
and I think you made a good point there, because what that brings you to is knowledge. It brings you into a state of knowledge, which is something which is more powerful and more important than belief. If you, that clip that I played of Corbett, the short clip, he talks about belief. I do not believe this, I do not believe that, or I do not support. I think he didn't use the word believe, I'm misquoting, but he said, I do not support mini nukes, I do not support, you know, video fakery. Well, it's not about supporting anything, it's about knowing what happened, you know, that's the point.
Think about this, Andrew, if you're just looking, you know, like at it from a cognitive perspective, you know, look at some of the visual evidence, you know, going back to what Fabrice was saying, to, you know, this is a question that stands. The volume of the World Trade Center wasn't visible, but what was visible and in volumes was ash.
You could call it ash, yes, it was it, but that denotes fire, you know, the residue of a fire, which is normally what is seen as ash. So you're probably better off calling it dust rather than ash, because that then it's, you know, ash can be dust, but dust isn't necessarily ash, or the other way around, if you see what I mean. So it's important to use your words carefully.
And you know, as you've also mentioned when you first came on, that World Trade Center 4 was actually cut in half, and there are huge holes in the middle of World Trade Center 5, and that's not mentioning, you know, the sheer problems just with, you know, what appears before your very own eyes. But Andrew, if people hadn't have come across the energy theories with what caused the destruction of the World Trade Center towers, how would you describe what happened that day in terms of...
Well, I mean, you don't need to really talk about theories, because if you look at what Dr. Wood does in her presentation specifically, and I think it's done most comprehensively in the one that she did in 2012, which was the Breakthrough Energy Movement, she goes through all the evidence. And, you know, it's a bit like going to a crime scene and looking at a body. So you look at the body, look at where it is, look at what's happened to it. And you find out that, you know, for example, if you've never heard of a gun before, you know, that fires a bullet at high speed, and you only know about bows and arrows or poisonings or that sort of thing. If you examine the body and the surrounding area, you could see evidence for something, you know, like a gun, but you may not necessarily know what a gun is. And that's what Dr. Wood essentially does. She does a forensic investigation into the crime scene. And the conclusion from that investigation is that it wasn't bombs, it wasn't a gravity-driven collapse, it wasn't nukes, It wasn't anything else. And then what she did after she'd originally done that, she saw certain phenomena in the evidence. For example, these cars which had sort of an effect that looked like burning on them, but yet the upholstery wasn't burned. And we had things that were levitated. We had paper next to cars, you know, where the car was all burned out and the paper wasn't burned. So there's a number of factors like this which show you and prove that it's some type of energy phenomenon. Right, and then you find other evidence, such as the presence of tritium, which is like a subform of hydrogen that was discovered in anomalous quantities in the bottom of World Trade Center 6 in the water there, and that is also a signature of what is found in cold fusion experiments. So you know, if you go through Dr. Wood's presentation, or you go through the book Where Did the Towers Go, you will see that you're left with only one conclusion, that this was caused by some type of energy phenomena, in other words, an energy weapon of some kind. And it's only through studying the evidence that you come to know that and understand it. It's not something that you believe, and it's not a theory. It's a bit like, you know, you don't go to court and say, well, I believe this person was shot with a double-barrel shotgun, but I don't have any evidence to prove it. In a court case, you have to take that evidence and prove it in a court of law that that's what caused the death of the person, you know, to prove your case. And that, of course, is what Dr. Wood attempted to do in 2007, where she put this evidence into a court case, which, of course, people like James Corbett and the many others, I'm not just singling him out, they hardly ever talk about that. You know, very rarely will talk about that. So that's the difference. And just to sort of go back to the Agenda 21 thing, why this is so important to know this and understand this for yourself is you then break free of any sort of programming which leads you to think that things like Agenda 21 is in any way justified, and it enables you to see it as a far more obvious scam than you might otherwise be able to see it for. Because global warming, for example, that's a total scam. That's what a lot of Agenda 21 is based on. And yet, what you can see with 9/11 evidence is you can see evidence which appears to show some type of weather control, which is manifested in the movements of Hurricane Erin, which, again, I've never heard James Corbett talk about. But that's all factual evidence.
Yeah, and it's, you can then look at some of the crop failures that have been occurring in different places at different times. That's also quite coincidental for certain groups' interests. And I mean, in terms of being busted for false flags, I think there's a growing belief that 9/11 is incredibly questionable. And there's Operation Northwoods, which was mentioned in terms of the president receiving false flags to crash airliners, kill civilians.
Absolutely, I'm familiar with that. Now, it's worth thinking about that a little bit more too. Now, I understand, I may be, I'm not 100% sure of this, but I think that document was released in a book called Body of Secrets, which is by James Bamford.
That's correct. I read it in early 2001, funnily enough.
Oh, you read it then, did you?
Yes, I did.
Great, great. Well, I only read that fairly recently. Yeah, I read that within the last sort of year, basically. And now that book, as I read it and I thought about it, it's actually, to me, like a public relations exercise for the NSA. That's what it reads like to me, particularly when it starts talking about 9/11. And it goes on about, you know, all the events surrounding that. That particular document, if you study it, the Operation Northwoods document, right, if you there's a good breakdown of that, which suggests that that document may not itself be totally genuine. For example, one of the things I remember is that it includes the use of the word holiday, which that's a British expression. You know, normally you say you don't say you're going on holiday in America. You say I'm going on vacation. And there are a few other things about that document, the Operation Northwood document. If you use your favourite search engine and find the page about that, you'll see there are certain questions about that document.
And it is interesting because actually, if you do look at the original document, it does say that there is a plan to shoot down an airliner which would give the appearance of school children on holiday, and that was the exact word that they used for that. So I can see that there are certain issues, or maybe it could be an indicator of who was involved.
Maybe I don't know.
With programs. But you know, as we were saying about proving the burden of proof, in terms of the Operation Gladio organization, which we've spoken about previously on the Bunker Show, which originally started as stay behinds after World War II, in case the Russians came through to use as resistance, they're actually used as state-sponsored terrorists,
right,
in 9 NATO countries: Belgium, Denmark, France, Germany, Greece, Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, and Turkey, and in 5 non-NATO countries: Austria, Finland, Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland. And in Italy, they were proved to be behind, I think, the Bologna, the Piazza Fontana bombing in December 1969. And that killed 17 people, wounded 88, right through to, in the 80s, the Bologna railway station bombing on the 2nd of August in 1980. Which killed 85 people and wounded more than 200. And people operating within the Italian government, state, military, were behind those attacks, which in total killed over 100 people and wounded many, many hundreds. So that's all put forward in, you know, many pieces of work on the strategy of tension employed by Operation Gladio, including the Republic of the Unpunished Massacres by Chief Justice Imposimato, the head of the Italian Supreme Court, President of the Italian Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. So if you can see that those operations have gone on in the past, what do you think they say about some of the more recent terrorist events that have happened sort of since the 1980s?
Well, I think, and, you know,
especially 9/11. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see the strategy of having operators in the field that can be used to create a certain type of illusion. You know, I mean, the sort of scenario you've described with the Gladio, operation is, you know, just make that, change Gladio to Al-Qaeda or change it to ISIS or ISIL or whatever, and it's pretty much the same thing. But I think, you know, one also has to consider that there is an equivalent sort of planting operation going on in the research community. And a lot of the information is controlled by what you might call, information operatives, or people who will actually put out ridiculous information and discredit themselves as a way of generating noise and covering up the truth. You know, you could argue that these are like information-based suicide bombers, which I have one particular example that comes to mind. You know, what I've written about. So, you know, I think you've got a physical thing going on in the, you know, with, as you say, these Gladio operatives. And I think you've got a kind of more of a psychological version of that going on in the research community as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting with some of those false flags that we've spoken about and mentioned is that there are some similarities. I mean, a good question to ask always is who benefits? But with all of those, the narrative is controlled, not just the narrative of the event, but also of the media and the general discourse. And, you know, it's clear to see how that's gone on in the past with things such as left-wing groups being blamed for those terrorist atrocities in Italy and in the Brabant massacres in Belgium, which is also another Gladio operation. So with those, it was directed towards certain groups. So do you think that actually observing those information suicide bombers can often be indicative of where to look?
Sure, yeah.
In terms of what information that they don't want to
proliferate. Yeah, I mean, you know, we had a couple of examples of this, you know, which come to mind. People that think that Dr. Judy Wood's research, for example, is, you know, is ridiculous or something, they often post on the internet this interview with a character called Greg Jenkins, who's this PhD physicist from the University of Maryland, and this interview took place at midnight in a room that was used without permission in the National Press Conference Club in Washington, D.C. And this chap, Greg Jenkins, you know, had two cameras and some lighting with him at midnight and interviewed Dr. Wood. A lot of people don't know the background to this interview. And then in this interview, he seemed to be obsessed with not talking about dust that was actually rising. And Dr. Wood wanted to talk about this dust that was so fine it was actually going up into the upper atmosphere. But it became clear in the discussion that Greg Jenkins, the physicist, didn't want to talk about this. He wanted to change the subject. So Dr. Wood sort of noted that and went and did some more research on what was happening with this dust. And, so in other words, that was just an example of what you described, that he was trying to act as an information diversionary tactic or suicide information bomber or something. And that point it was known there was something sensitive there which he didn't want people to think about. And so Dr. Wood went off and looked for that. And lo and behold, that was what ultimately led to the discovery of Hurricane Erin on satellite photographs. So you could partly thank Greg Jenkins for that, even though he was trying to divert attention away from such things.
It was really interesting, Andrew. I remember last time we spoke, you mentioned that there was, you know, globally, in certain areas, particularly in Canada and Alaska, an energy drain, and that was a verifiable event.
It wasn't an energy drain. Sorry, just to clear that up. It wasn't an energy drain. It was a change in the Earth's magnetic field, and it was.
That's right. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it was measured in Alaska. It was a, you know, fairly subtle change, but measurable.
And that was verifiable by official agencies, wasn't it?
Right.
So why isn't that news? Why would you suggest that hasn't made the popular press?
Well, I think there are two reasons. One is that in the research community itself, which should be the first place it's talked about, the alternative knowledge research community, where people are doing this for love, not for money, so they're not worried so much about careers and jobs and so forth, and they don't necessarily have a very large audience. It's been covered up. You know, that's pretty clear to me. There's been people that have tried to sort of misquote it and distract from it and this sort of thing. In this sort of mainstream, it's just regarded as too far off the radar screen. People, if you start talking about energy weapons and stuff like that without a careful consideration of the evidence, it's too far off the radar screen for most people to look at. You know, you need, for example, you need at least an hour to go through the evidence from the beginning to the middle to the end to get to the point where you can accept, you know, some of the things that I'm saying. If you just bring it out straight away, you've lost it. You know, you're never going to get anywhere with that.
Well, just, you know, if the general public was to just Google, you know, energy weapons, there's a history, there's a military history, a verifiable history of the use of mazes and tasers as weapons. And, you know, this isn't new. This is
That's right. That's true. And, I mean, I even encountered going back a few years, people that would deny such things as directed energy weapons exist. And that was despite you being simply able to search for Directed Energy Directorate, which is based at Kirtland Air Force Base, you know, and Applied Research Associates being founding sponsors of Directed Energy Professional Society. So in other words, the evidence denial was so strong, and this is within the 9/11 research community, that they denied the existence of existing white world military technology. You know, that's how bad and that's how desperate these people were to dissociate the idea of energy weapons from what happened on 9/11. They were so desperate to do that that they would make themselves look ridiculous.
And it is a way of debasing the conversation, especially when it does go that far, because sometimes it's easy to approach with almost a preset idea. I mean, with the 7/7 bombings that took place in London, when there's problems with the first official narrative, which is saying the suicide bombers, alleged suicide bombers, were on a train that didn't actually run that day. There's no CCTV. There's, if you look at the inquest, was there an inquest? The report?
Eventually there was, Do you know?
The damage on the tube trains, it's difficult for people to accept that, actually there could be something Gladio style that went on, and over 50 people were killed, and they didn't have the usual processes in terms of, autopsies, coroner's reports and such like. So that obviously, you know, raises some questions that do need to be answered.
Of course. Do you know what 7/7 was first reported as before the suicide bomber story?
Yeah, it was a live exercise, wasn't it?
No. Well, I don't know about live. That came out later. But do you know what the incident was first reported as? It wasn't reported as bombs going off. Do you know what it was reported as?
I don't.
It was reported as a power surge on the underground.
Oh, I did not know that. That's incredible.
Yep. And then if you go back a few weeks, and I discovered this by accident, that on the 17th of May 2005, in other words, about, six or eight weeks before the events, the BBC had a story that a power surge had affected the London Underground and knocked out CCTV cameras.
Ah, that's interesting. And that was, did you say early May?
That was about 17th of May 2005 that story came out. And people had talked about energy surges and this sort of thing. So, you know, I'm not trying to sort of bring it round to the energy issue that much, because I haven't studied it as much as I've studied 9/11. But certainly it was interesting, for example, listening to Mark Honigsbaum's account, because I was, you know, when 9/11 happened, when 7/7 happened, I knew on the day it wasn't like the official story. I remember distinctly because I was working that day and I was speaking to somebody and they said, oh, there's been a bombing in London. And I said, I bet there hasn't, you know, I said something like, it's not going to be like what you think, I can tell you that much. And so I listened to the Mark Honigsbaum account, and he described how in the station at Edgware Road, he saw the passengers, you know, I think minutes, half an hour after the events, and they said that they described the tiles on the floor of the train, you know, rising up in some type of explosion. So how can tiles from the floor rise up if you've got a guy, you know, with a rucksack bomb, you know?
Yeah, and also the number of injuries to people's lower half as opposed to their upper half from, you know, where the epicenter of the explosion should have been.
Yes.
You know, it didn't match up and doesn't match up in quite a number of ways. But with evidence that strong out there, there is quite a lot of, I guess, resistance to it and disinformation to it, which is, you know, why it's really important to do what you do, which is, you know, check the evidence and, you know, look into exactly what's happening, and also some of those false flag clues. I mean, we briefly mentioned sort of legislation and, well, war plans that had already been written before the incident that triggered the conflict had occurred. But also with some of the false flags that we mentioned in mainland Europe in Operation Gladio, those were conducted not to go to war, but to restrict liberty to change people's voting intentions in Italy. So you can see that some of those reasons for actually killing people aren't as strong as triggering people to go to war. So do you think that false flags can be used as a distraction technique?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, it's clear that that's the sort of thing they're trying to do, is use those exercises to divert attention away from another agenda, you know, which is, as you say, things like introducing new legislation or new measures to curb liberties. I mean, that's clear. You know, it's been that. I mean, that's the thing that's spoken about by a lot of people. You know, David Icke talked about it. Alex Jones is on about it all the time. You know, and I sort of feel that you know, I don't need to talk about that myself because so many other people talk about it. Because
It's interesting you bring that up, because, you know, it's some of the small scale sort of false flags that, you know, you could look into, and the sort of social ripples and the erosion of liberties that are associated with things like Dunblane. You know, like, would you suggest that you know, like, some of the smaller events are quite impactful?
Well, I think there are probably certain instances where legislation has changed because of some of the smaller incidents. But I think a lot of those are just to generate fear in the population, and thereby legislation which might be loosely related, like, for example, introducing thumbprint scanners at school because, you know, a school shootings in America, or, you know, something like Dunblane, you know, or putting CCTV cameras in schools, you know, to sort of catch these victims more easily and this sort of thing. You know, yeah, of course it's going to help them get those things in place more easily, and with the population being more accepting of them. But as I say, I think there's a larger agenda here, which I think helps people escape from all of that, which again is the understanding that we do have use of free energy technologies, because once that is understood by people, that just changes the whole planet, you know. It really does. It changes the way that we live. It changes the way, for example, that towns and cities may or may not need to be constructed. You know, you don't need road transport. You don't need, you know, you can have anti-gravity propulsion. So once you get those things and start to understand that those things are real, and they are real now, right, that your whole outlook, in other words, how I describe that is, you know, people like Alex Jones, for example, and David Icke and other people, they talk about New World Order, it's coming, it's here, you know, we're going to get chipped, we're going to get, predictive programming, all this blah, 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 blah. What I feel very strongly is that why a lot of these people have become anti the research on 9/11, which proves that energy weapons destroyed the World Trade Center, is that's actually a way out of the New World Order thinking completely. It proves that we can completely escape from the New World Order once we know that this technology is real, and we take steps to expose it and expose the way it's been used and the extent to which we've been deceived. In other words, not only have we got the level of deception talked about by, you know, David Icke, Alex Jones, etc., etc., we've got another level of deception beyond that, which is so, you know, profound that once we break through that, we have an even better opportunity of changing the world into something completely different.
It would be an exceptional paradigm changer to, you know, get more people to understand the potentials for that. And also to look at, I guess, some of the ways in which we can see technological advancement in terms of our personal communication technology.
Right.
But yet, in terms of the internal combustion engine and our transport situation, and it's reliant on, what is it, well over 100 years in terms of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the technology has gone backwards. It's certainly in terms of space travel. I mean, we've had a few incremental developments, you know, in internal combustion engine technology, but you know, it's nothing like we've seen in, for example, the advance in digital technologies, you know, which we've seen an enormous advance in. And I just wanted to basically dwell on this point of David Icke, for example, because, you know, he's done a lot of great research. He's done fantastic exposition of, you know, the New World Order's sort of the way that they do things, you know, problem, reaction, solution. All that stuff that he's done has been, it's opened my eyes, you know, so a lot of people's eyes to it. But yet, for example, on 9/11, same as James Corbett, similar type of thing. And in fact, I can tell you that David Icke, his website was one of the only other websites in the UK to offer the Where Did the Towers Go book, that's Dr. Judy Wood's book, for sale. And I know that because I used to fulfill the orders and I would send them out. The orders were sent to me by email and I would send them out to the people who'd ordered them from my house. Now, sometime in the last 18 months or so, the book that was listed on his website, Where Did the Towers Go, has now been taken off with no explanation, which is ill, rather strange, assuming that David Icke, like James Corbett, you know, is interested in the truth of 9/11. And while we're on the subject, you know, I really want to just make sure people understand this, what I think is going on. I've got a clip of David Icke here as well, which I can play from the Richie Allen show, which was 18th of November last year, which I'd like to play that if I may. So not very long, it's like a minute or something.
Okay, yeah, take it away.
Okay, let me just give that.
Let's move on to an email from Ed.
We've got to put aside personal desire for fame or ambition.
Petty jealousy,
or,
yeah.
Or I know more than you. And all this bloody childish nonsense. We've got to put that aside. And we've got to say, okay, we agree this is happening. We might not agree on the depths of the rabbit hole from which it's happening, and that Ike does seem to be a bit far out in some of what he says. But let's come together on what we agree on, which is, I mean, for instance, 9/11. All we need to agree on about 9/11 is that it was created on purpose to provide the excuse for what has followed. That's all we need to agree on. We don't need to agree on whether this substance brought the towers down or these energy weapons. That might be interesting, but we don't need to agree on that. We don't need to argue over it. We don't need to come into conflict over it like children.
Yeah, it's madness.
All we need to agree on is the obvious. 9/11 was created as an excuse for all that's followed. Okay, got there. Let's move on. And again, it's seeing the picture and not getting caught in the dots and the bubble. Because 9/11, Rich, in the alternative media, has become for many people a bubble. Arguing about whether it's an energy weapon or whether it's this very substance that brought the towers down, whether the planes were this, or whether it was a bloody holographic illusion, all this stuff. It doesn't matter. It's interesting, but it doesn't matter. What matters is it was done as an excuse for what has followed.
What do you think of that?
I can agree with, you know, David as to, you know, why the events happen and, you know, a number of the false flags that we've spoken about today. And
it's a bit of a cop-out maneuver, isn't it, really? Because, you know, when you think about it, the neocons had the plans out there for yonks. You know, back as early as the 80s, they had the plans for the new American century. That was open. Everybody knew about it. So,
the interesting thing with that David Icke clip is the way that, you know, moving on is shutting down the conversation.
Right. Now,
saying
what
it's
I
not
want,
important.
What I want to
when
say
actually,
that.
You know, whether you agree with somebody or disagree with somebody, that's no excuse not to have the conversation. It's possible to, you know, have different opinions than somebody and have the discussion about it. And
I mean,
what you do agree on, of course, you know, make that count, but not at the expense of, you know, pursuing it and looking into actually where the evidence takes you.
There's a few problems with what David Icke said there, really, because he was very emphatic. And David Icke claims that he wants people to think for themselves, but he was then dictating what they should be thinking about 9/11. And how they should be reacting to 9/11 research. And David Icke is completely incorrect when he says it doesn't matter whether it was this substance or an energy weapon. Of course it matters, because if you're interested in who did 9/11 and what technology they have, you should establish what the truth is. And that's something that I'm very interested in. And for David Icke to come out with something like that, that I find that deeply, deeply troubling. You know, I'm quite happy for him to say something like, well, I've researched the sort of political angle of 9/11 and, you know, the sort of problem, reaction, solution side of it, and I'm happy with that side of things, but I haven't researched the minutiae of, you know, the forensics of it, but I know someone that has, and I know someone that submitted a court case. I might not understand all the technical details, but there's this book available, and it's available on my website if anybody wants to read it. And that would have been the situation, because, as I say, he did sell the book on his website. And I actually met David Icke, and I had a 2.5-hour long meeting with him in 2008, when this was before the Where Did the Tiles Go book came out. And he was quite interested in what I had to say, because he said to me at that time, in our conversation, that he was writing about energy. And I said, well, David, yeah, 9/11 is all about energy, not just about consciousness, you know, the energy of consciousness and depressing the conscious energy down into a lower state with fear, which is, I think, you know, what he was looking at. It's about energy used technologically, you know, to produce a physical outcome in physical materials as well. So isn't that interesting, David? Well, apparently it isn't of any interest any longer. Not in 2015, it wasn't. So I found that very peculiar myself.
It's an interesting one. I mean, we had a guest on last week who's a neuroscientist and working with AIs, and he was also talking about the energetic nature of the universe and the energetic and electrical nature of our consciousness, our conscious fields, our brains. And I mean, one of the things which I find it challenging with David Icke is when he says, you know, people have got to do this, or people have got to, you know, move on, or people have got to do the other thing, because essentially it's always best to make the case for what you're doing and leave it to other people to make up their own mind. And if you can make your case better and stronger and clearer and more concise and broader reaching, the better, rather than, you know, telling people that they, you know, have got to do this or got to do that, even if you're saying you've got to pull your hand out of the fire because it's going to burn it off.
And I mean, well, yeah, the point about establishing what happened is it then enables you to try and go after the people that did it, or at least the people that, you know, should know who did it. I mean,
that's from the ancient art of war by Sun Tzu, isn't it? That's
well, you know, yeah, going to the back to the art of war, it maybe 9/11 is a problem that requires a myriad of angles and different approaches, because, you know, when you think about it, you know, we seem to be focusing on the Twin Towers, but, you know, what went on with the Pentagon? What happened
But there is a reason for that, though. There is a reason for that, though, Jimmy, and that's because of the amount of evidence. And the amount of evidence at the World Trade Center is by far and away the greatest. So, in other words, if you want to, as we try to do, go after the people that should have given us the truth, at least, even if we can't go after the people that did it, then you have the best chance with the amount of evidence that's at the World Trade Center, because, you know, you have thousands of witnesses, you had, hundreds of video clips, you had thousands of photographs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas at the Pentagon, there was many fewer witnesses, maybe, you know, hundreds rather than thousands. And at Shanksville, there was, you know, less again. So there is a kind of practical reason for focusing on the events at the World Trade Center. That's not to sort of say you should ignore what happened at the Pentagon, but other studies have been done about that. The Citizen Investigation Team, they've done a fairly comprehensive investigation of what happened there. And notice that I mentioned them, right? I mentioned them. I mentioned their investigation, Citizen Investigation Team, about the Pentagon. Would they mention Dr. Judy Wood's research and talk about her court case? I'd be very surprised if they would. This is the problems.
Yeah, and I think that's often a pointer to, you know, where there are major issues that need to be looked into further, or when the establishment is incredibly keen to control the situation, the narrative. Especially with the Twin Towers, when you have people who seemingly are disrobing and then jumping from, you know, tall buildings. That's a really unusual behavior. It's tragic. It's horrific. Yes, it does shock you. But actually, what you think, you know, what must a poor person be thinking to do that? It's a horrible place to even think about. But actually, sometimes these things do need, you know, given their consideration, and especially when you look into all the other questions. You know, you mentioned substances found in the base of where the Trade Center towers stood. And there was also, you know, temperatures there that were quite unusual, reported for a number of days afterwards.
Oh no, that was disinformation. The temperatures there were perfectly normal. I mean, we've got pictures of, rescue workers walking in the bottom of the buildings in puddles of water. So there wasn't any molten metal there. That becomes clear if you continue to study the evidence that was a story that was circulated to support the idea of there being, fires burning, high heat, molten metal. In fact, this was one of the things they had to get people away from thinking. They had to get people away from thinking that there was no heat and it was actually fairly cool, you know, and they didn't want you to talk about people that were covered in dust but weren't burned, which you can clearly see in the videos anyway. So, these are the diversionary tactics in operation.
Now, before, I guess, you know, it'd be interesting to, take a look at it. We've laid out some interesting cases, some interesting evidence about false flags and their previous use. And in terms of 9/11, the irrefutable is the Richard D. Hall, Rich Planet, is well worth checking out if you want to spend an hour and look at some of the evidence. I'm sure Andrew will have a recommendation for you as well.
Yes,
and then
sure,
maybe
exactly.
We can look.
There's also another film which was made, which somebody sent to me about 6 months ago, which is called BBC Covers Up Forensic Investigation of 9/11. And what I found is that the irrefutable film that you mentioned, which Richard had put on his website, although he didn't make it, but he has been promoting it in his tour and everything, which is fantastic. That's got quite a lot of sort of Hollywood-type music in it and graphics and this sort of thing. Very well put together, but some people have been put off by the sort of booming music and so forth. So this other film, which is called BBC Census Forensic 9/11 Evidence, that's about an hour as well. and that's just a completely different style, although it covers, you know, most of the same evidence, and there's almost no music in that, and it's very sort of, you know...
It's more of a classic documentary style.
Actually, kind of, yeah, yeah. Have you seen it?
I have indeed, I'm really glad you recommended it. We mentioned 7-7 as well, as some of the others that show potentials of false flags, and some that are definitely the paperwork and the evidence trail is there. So, you know, how do you think in today's world that that experience or that knowledge or that insight can give us some understanding of what's going on now? And I guess, you know, we've the British Parliament has authorised deals to vote to bomb Syria now. Even though it's potentially against international law, how do you think that some of those that false flag ideology or false flag mentality or process is at work today, and how can people watch out for it?
I think you do become wise to it. I mean, probably most of the listeners are pretty much wise to it already, because they will have looked at all these other events we've been talking about. And, for example, when the events happened in Paris, I think it was Friday the 13th of November, wasn't it, when we had the alleged bombing of the restaurants? And I know there were various questions asked about that. But, again, it was very similar to 7-7. You know, some people say there weren't any bombs, and nobody was killed and all this. And to be honest, I haven't studied it to that level, so I don't know what happened in Paris on the 13th of November, but I have seen the TV broadcast where the newscaster is saying that there was an exercise going on for a bombing in Paris on the same, you know, at the same time or on the morning of when it happened and stuff, you know, and this news report was saying, I can't believe it, I can't believe this exercise was going on. So it's exactly the same as with 7-7 and the Peter Power thing that was going on. And then we had the Panorama program a year before about bombing London, you know. And then, of course, I noticed you typed in the window there. We've got this this disaster drill in there with a tower block collapsing into an underground thing that's been going off, I think, today or yesterday or the last couple of days, you know. So, yeah, so if you see these drills and you see these sorts of things coming out, then switch on your antennae and tune up your bullshit meters, if I can say that word.
Yes, of course.
And just be watching out for what sort of they're going to try and plant into your brain. And I will also say that you have to do that with stuff that's posted on the internet now, because things have been changed. I'm talking about, for example, Sandy Hook, where the research community has basically been set against itself, with some people that believe that no one died at Sandy Hook, and other people believe that some people died, you know, and then there were some people saying there were actors and so forth. This has become a real battleground, and, you know, I think there's the same sort of thing could happen with other false flags that are then, you know, studied and analysed by people like ourselves. And it's much harder now because of the rapidity that the internet is flooded with, you know, Twitter posts, Facebook posts, you know, and this sort of thing.
So, again, looking for the sources, the original sources of the material is always useful. And I guess, you know, the questions that stand, as we like to say here in the bunker, no, if you're going to blow people up as a suicide bomber, you're going to a football game, you'd turn up before the game started if you've got a ticket for the game. They detonated their device, I think, 15 minutes before the end of the game whilst being turned away from the turnstile. So if you wait outside, then actually, you know, the place is going to be jam-packed full of people in 15 minutes, 20 minutes. So, you know, those kind of questions don't make sense, in, it, as I mentioned in 7-7, with the absence of any evidence placing any of the four people who allegedly carried out there in the places that the explosions happened. So I guess picking out those questions and working out which of them, you know, aren't answered or
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I did want to mention about the Paris events as well, because again, I put that into this Agenda 21 presentation because we had the bombings, or alleged bombings, or whatever, real bombings or alleged bombings, I'm not sure which they were at this point. Then we had the climate change summit, I think a few days afterwards. So all the climate change protesters, who are most of them are clueless about the ongoing geoengineering that's been happening probably for at least 14, 15 years now, since 9/11, that is, and probably before then, they're clueless about that. But they were all, you know, a lot of them were arrested and they couldn't protest in front of these officials that were at this COP21 summit. So it's like you've got these two interlocking psychological operations, one being climate change propaganda and one being propaganda to do with terrorism and all that sort of thing. They were, you know, I said it on in my presentation, they had a happy marriage in the city of romance, Paris, those two psychological operations. So, you know, again, you see it going on in all fields, terrorism, climate change, health, energy, mm-hmm. you know, you name it.
Yeah,
it's the same sort of thing going on.
And do you think that you know, people's attention is being drawn more towards the agencies that are carrying out a number of those operations? I'm talking about the intelligence services.
Well, I hope so, because it's really the intelligence agencies which are one of the key, you know, instigators of. Maybe not necessarily the operations themselves, but they are enabling these operations to continue. And I would say to anybody that's in the intelligence services that's listening to this, then think about leaving your job, you know, because if you have any knowledge about any of these sorts of things that, you know, either upcoming or recently happened in Paris, London, New York, if you have any knowledge that these are not what is being claimed by the mainstream, you should be speaking out. You have a duty to speak out, or you have a duty to just leave that job and go and do something else. Do not support these people that are, you know, preventing us from knowing the truth about what happened in these operations.
And there are, you know, people who have worked for the intelligence services who assist whistleblowers and people who are wishing to say enough is enough. And, you know, there have been in the past people such as Annie Michaud and David Chayla, and, you know, a number of people from the police forces as well who've spoken out and brought to life a number of child abuse allegations that have been long buried. As we're just running towards the end of the show, we've overrun a little bit. So for all listeners tuning in for the Cannabis Compassion Club, they'll be with you in a little over 5 minutes. Andrew, you know, you've given a message to the people who work for the intelligence services. What message do you have for the members of parliament, the people who are allegedly running things upstairs in the madhouse, in the houses of parliament?
Well, I mean, my message to them is, I essentially presented this on a Facebook page, which I think I posted a couple of days after the horrible events in Paris, and that's, we don't believe you. I do not believe you. Anything that comes out of your mouth, because you don't tell the truth about 9/11, because you won't embrace the evidence, I'm just not going to believe you. So I encourage anybody who's studied this evidence about a particular event that they're convinced about, I'd say 9/11 has the most evidence out of all the ones we've discussed tonight.
And
write to your MP or whoever, say, I don't believe you. I have no faith in you. I have no confidence in your ability to produce, a good outcome for the people of Britain or the people of the world, because you do not know what I know.
Do you think that's also true for the antique media? Not us here on Dark City, because, you know, we give unedited, real life, free speaking forum for people here.
Yeah.
But, you know, the old antique media, what do you think, Andrew?
Well, I mean, you know, the antiquated media, the BBC and so forth, they're obviously part of the cover up. They're a willing part of it. It's not just they're ignorant.
Do you think people still believe them?
A lot of people still believe them. The newspapers still sell, unless they're taking them all away and burning them, sit quietly at night. You know, I see people walking onto our estate with a newspaper under their arm, you know, and thinking, what the hell you got that under your arm for, you know. Toilet paper's cheaper than newspaper, you know. So do you
think people are ridiculing that more in terms of when people are being asked to have their beliefs stretched by, you know, Jihadi John making a comeback tour or
I think there's
know,
a bit
whatever the other...
I think there's a bit more scepticism about some of the stories in the mainstream, but I just wish that there would be more people voting with their feet and voting with their pockets, you know, and pulling their Sky subscriptions. You know, I think there's a good lot of people that could still pull their Sky subscriptions that don't, or pull their support from any mainstream sources that don't. I think if more people could be boycott these sources, and these sources knew that they were being boycotted, then again, that might be a way of perhaps accelerating some kind of change to a more, equitable system. I don't know.
And of course, you know, taking advantage of the opportunities that are here with some of the newer wave media to, help bring people
Absolutely.
Intelligent conversation and intelligent analysis. And thank you for playing your part and joining us this evening, Andrew.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Where can people find out more?
Well, if anybody's near the town of Shepley, which is not too far from Huddersfield, this Saturday, I've been invited by a group there to give a talk on what we've been talking about tonight, 9/11, Finding the Truth. So I'll be there on Saturday at 1 o'clock. I think there are a few tickets left, maybe one or two. It might have sold out, but I can send them contact details for that. Go to checktheevidence.com. All the stuff's on there. It's got a search feature on there. You can always write to me if you can't find anything, and I'll give you a link to what you're interested in if I can find it myself.
Excellent. And, I recommend people check out The Expanding Earth. I thoroughly enjoyed your program on that.
Thanks.
Have you got any, other speaking engagements coming up?
Yes, I'll be, actually got quite a few. They're all listed on the homepage, and I'll be, surprised. I've got just a lot of that have come up at once. I will be in April. I will be at New Horizons in Leatherton Thames. I'm going to be at the Probe Conference, which is also in Leatherton Thames, sort of next door to that other one. That's two consecutive days, different subjects. I'll be at the High Wycombe Paranormal Group on the 27th of April. I'll also be in Wallsend in Newcastle on the 16th of April as well. So people do want to come to any of those places. It'd be wonderful to see you.
Yeah, you know, the one thing, it's been wonderful to have you back, Andrew, and, you know, the one thing I do agree with David Icke, in essence, is that if we all agree that it's a bit yuck at the moment, you know, what
right.
alternatives are there? You know, like, we can at least start thinking about that.
Sure.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming on tonight, mate.
Thank you.
And thank you to Helen in the chat room.
Yeah, thanks for the chat room, guys, and hope I'll have my voice back next week.
And thank you very much for everybody who's participated in the chat room, everybody who shared a flyer. Don't go anywhere. We've got the Dark City Cannabis Compassion Club coming right up. And tomorrow we've also got the Pax Mundi show from 7 and the I Am show with Sarah at 9. And also at 9 on Friday is the Permaculture show with Norris. So thank you all for joining us in the bunker. We'll be back next week. Till then, keep smiling, and we'll look forward to seeing you then. Good night.